and welcome back to Inside the Business of Sports. This is Michael Carlisle, and I am joined, as always, by Professor K, Cleveland's sports business professor. And Professor K, we have got a very, very special guest with us today. I'm going to let you bring him in, but I am so excited for this conversation.
Well, we do. And one of our goals when we started this, could we get senior leadership in the sports business industry on the show? And we're doing that today with Brian Barrett, who is the CEO of the Cleveland Guardians. And Brian, I'm guessing that also makes you the CEO of Progressive Field. And I know we're going to talk about some exciting changes that are in the future there, but welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
So Brian, just to kind of get our listeners in tune and everything, can you tell us a little bit about your journey and becoming the CEO of the Guardians? Because it was not a traditional journey. You had quite a career in private business before coming over to baseball. So give us a little bit of that background and that journey.
Sure. I started at Procter & Gamble right out of college and spent 24 and a half years in various customer business development roles into general management on the customer-facing portion of the business at Procter & Gamble. So spent 6 years down in Fayetteville, Bentonville, Arkansas, working on Procter & Gamble's business with Walmart globally. Spent time working in and out of Cincinnati a few different times and finished working on the Procter & Gamble Kroger business team located in Cincinnati. And a great opportunity to lead and develop what Procter & Gamble would call multifunctional business teams, where you'd have business development and human resources and finance, IT, market research, brand, logistics, working collaboratively up against maximizing profitable share growth with customers. And certainly afforded me an opportunity to learn the importance of developing clear strategies and priorities, codifying work processes, developing people, both from a talent acquisition as well as a talent development standpoint. And as a publicly traded company, measuring results and delivering against quarterly earnings.
Right, right. And two great companies with Walmart and Kroger's to really interface with.
A lot of great learning, both from the customer as well as from the resources that I was surrounded by at Procter & Gamble. And you're right, Jim. There's nothing better than collaborating and learning how to create value for your customer as well as for your company. So oftentimes those can be very challenging circumstances to manage. But if you stay focused on what you have in common, and oftentimes in the retail consumer products industry, it's working backwards from the shopper and what the shopper's needs are, what those insights are among specific segments of shoppers, that you develop strategies and execute business plans that ultimately enable you to create value by focusing on what you have in common with the customer.
Right. And then real quick, you are a local kid that went to Gilmore High School, correct?
I grew up in Columbus, and my father actually was a high school football coach and mathematics teacher. So I moved up to Cleveland in the mid-1980s, and my father started at Gilmore Academy as their athletic director and head football coach, and taught mathematics and finished his career starting football at Notre Dame Cathedral Latin out in Chardon. So like many, I had the experience of growing up in Columbus. I always tipped towards the Cleveland teams as a young boy growing up. But once you've spent time in Cleveland, you're always welcome back to Cleveland. And if you're from Cleveland, you can joke about being from Cleveland. If you're not, be careful what you say. We take things personally. There's a lot of pride and loyalty in being from Cleveland and Northeast Ohio, and that's a lot of fun.
Yes, there is. And today, you know, most of our questions, we want to take your fans, our fans, future students, parents behind the scenes. So let's get going on the Guardians. But last year, unbelievable year for the Guardians, performance-wise, playoffs. But how did that impact the team's sales and marketing efforts in the offseason? Because a lot of what happens in the offseason. So you're riding the success of a playoff team, and talk to us a little bit about the strategies and everything that you hope to capitalize as we move forward with this season.
So we typically will plan our business priorities or strategies in 3 to 5 year forward looking increments. You know, the 2022 season was exciting for a lot of different reasons. We changed our team name from the Indians to the Guardians after 106 years as the Indians. A great history, a lot of pride in Major League Baseball being in Cleveland for over a century. We had the youngest team in Major League Baseball last year. And when it comes to the business of baseball, we typically caveat with two things. We don't control baseball team performance, and we don't control the weather. As we saw, you know, a couple of snowflakes last week, and you know, then it was 80 degrees. That weather one is kind of interesting, and you kind of go with a flow with no roof in our ballpark. But our baseball operations team with you know, Chris Antonetti, Mike Chernoff, Matt Forman, obviously Tito as a Hall of Fame manager, we're blessed to have some of the best in the baseball operations world in Major League Baseball. Continuity, and those folks do an incredible job fielding a competitive baseball team. So we were able to catch the tailwinds last year of obviously strong team performance, a young, very exciting baseball team. And as we headed into the offseason, we've refreshed our 3 to 5 year forward-looking plans. And there's kind of three core areas that we think about from a business operations standpoint. The first one is we think about cultivating the talent that our business operations team needs to compete both now and in the future. And our competitive set from a business standpoint is really sports and entertainment in the broadest sense, so that as individuals and families and businesses, to the extent they have a choice around where they want to spend discretionary dollars, that's the competitive set from a business standpoint. Whereas obviously the baseball team is competing against 29 other Major League Baseball teams. Our second priority was activating our new brand to grow our fan base. And our third one, as we look forward over the next 3 to 5 years, it's tailoring the physical and digital fan experience to deliver on what we see as shifting fan expectations. And as we talk a little bit more about renovations in a few minutes, that hopefully makes some more sense. We have significant renovations coming in the offseason of 2023, heading into 2024, and another round in the offseason of 2024, heading into 2025. And we'll leverage a lot of fan insight into the development of new fan-facing products across different segments of fans. One thing that we did do heading into this season was we introduced a product called the Ballpark Pass. It is a standing room only ballpark pass. It's $49 a month and it automatically renews. A piece of learning that came 7, 8, 9 years ago when we built the Corner Bar, which has been a pretty popular place at Progressive Field over the course of the last several years, is fans, in particular younger fans, want to have places and spaces where they can gather and interact with friends and not necessarily be confined to a seat. So as we built the Corner Bar, the insight that went into designing that space was taking seats out and putting in drink rails. And Cleveland, a fun fact, AC Nielsen syndicated data driven, so I'm not making this one up.
Right. Cleveland
has the second highest beer drinking per capita in the United States. So, you know, when you look at alcohol and say beer, wine, spirits, beer over indexes in Cleveland and craft beer over indexes in Cleveland. So a mainstay in our Corner Bar is local craft beers. And generally speaking, a younger demographic where that $49 a month standing room only pass works pretty effectively. We're a couple of games into the season at home this year. We had, you know, over 70% of the fans that bought that product used it on opening day. We had the Yankees here for a couple of games 2 weeks ago, and it was pretty warm weather. So we had redemptions, you know, pushing 30% against the Yankees. It's a little colder tonight on a Monday night against the Colorado Rockies. it will probably dip down into, you know, the 15 to 20% range. But that's an example of a product that we introduced now with an eye toward things that are coming in the future that's really driven by fan insight.
No, it's one that I celebrated in the classroom. And what a great way to get college kids who are working on a limited budget introduced to, you know, your organization, really as a subscription member at the low end of the escalator as they start to work their careers and their way up in business. So
that's exactly right. And, you know, frankly, with walking distance from Cleveland State, you know, there's a good example of a core segment of fans that early in the baseball season, you know, April, May, while school may still be in session, you know, younger demographic can walk to baseball games. And as they come back in August, September, the same thing. So as it relates to baseball, you know, college students in particular really give you pretty good coverage for 3.5 or 4 of the 6 months of a baseball season, which is exactly what we're looking for.
Sure does. So, hey, Michael and I dedicated a whole show to the pitch clock. So this is just a quick hitter, but how's the pitch clock working? And really to kind of go behind the scenes, what does that mean for, you know, your game day operations folks? And what are you seeing it meaning to the fans from a fan experience standpoint?
It's a great question. So games on average are a little more than 30 minutes shorter. So that component has taken games from averaging a little over 3 hours to closer to 2.5 hours so far this season. And we saw similar dynamics as we experimented and implemented it during spring training. For a lot of the minor league players that have come up, the younger players, as the pitch clock was tested at the minor league level over the course of the last couple of years, younger players in general tend to be more accustomed to what they may need to be thinking about or considering as it relates to the pitch clock. But that coupled with larger bases has led to more action. And, you know, when you've got a guy on base, we have a young team this year that actually also has a lot of speed. You're seeing a lot more stolen bases and a lot more action, which from a fan perspective makes that experience much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
From a business standpoint, it hasn't really changed that much in terms of how we think about our game day operations. We open gates, you know, an hour before games on weeknights, 90 minutes before games on weekends. We'll continue to do that. It really has not had a negative impact on concessions or merchandising sales. And I would frame it this way. You know, most of the habits and practices of fans, when they first enter the ballpark, once they get through security and the anxiety of, am I going to get in on time for the first pitch? They're typically looking for, you know, something to eat or drink on the way to their seats.
Right.
And that becomes kind of the first stop from a food and beverage perspective. Most fans on average will replenish, you know, probably one point something times a game. So it may take, you know, early in the game, the third inning, the fourth inning, they may go for a refill, grab another snack. If it's a family with children, that may be a little bit different as they're getting up and down with children. But oftentimes later in the game, you know, consumption on things to drink and things to eat does tend to slow down as the game starts to wind down. So we haven't really seen too much of a negative impact. We haven't seen anything so far this season on that front. So we're excited about the way the pitch clock is speeding up the game, bringing more excitement and more action. And we're looking forward to seeing, as certainly as we head into the summer months and warmer weather, where attendance tends to grow, how those dynamics play out over the course of a full season.
All right. Well, I don't want to steal all the questions. So Michael is a student of mine, and he usually will come up with a couple of questions. So Michael, I know you had some questions ready for Brian. Go ahead.
I do. And I loved hearing you talk about the young nature of this team, the way they play ball. I love seeing people on Twitter, you know, we're playing an ugly brand of baseball, and it's a brand of baseball that I absolutely love. And I think a lot of our fans do, because Cleveland has such a loyal fan base. So how are we going to reach new fans and expand that audience to be more out there? Is the pitch clock going to play into the overall marketing of that as well?
It's a great question, Michael. And one of the things that Alex King, who leads our brand and marketing team, Jason Wiedemann, these two folks actually came from Procter & Gamble. Dave Z, it's just easier to call his last name Z rather than try and pronounce it, also came from market research at Procter & Gamble. So one of the things that we did, you know, like 10 or 11 years ago was we brought a concept called fan segmentation into Major League Baseball. And many teams now use this. Conceptually, it's something that consumer products companies have done for many years. It's identifying different segments of consumers that use your product and making sure you understand the insights, both quantitatively and qualitatively, as it relates to what's important to them, what their spending habits, what their usage habits may look like. So we actually just refreshed our fan segmentation to help inform a lot of the renovations that are coming up. And we typically assign like a moniker, a bumper sticker to these fan segments. I'll show a visual. I don't know if this will come through or not, but we actually built these in baseball cards. And we've got 8 fan segments. So longtime loyals are our most loyal fans. They attend most of our games. They spend most of the money, and they're often season ticket holders. So that's when I say that the moniker kind of describes who they are. It should make some sense. The Guardians, baseball, team and player connections are very important motivators, and there aren't a lot of barriers. These are your loyal diehard fans, and we call them longtime loyals. You've got we call some standings surfers. These are big fans. Their attendance is highly linked to team performance, and they get excited and they get frustrated very easily when the team's playing well. They can't put enough wind in your sails. When the team's not playing well, they're not too happy, and they let you know that. They have a couple of barriers. They want to make sure that they are getting a good value for the money that they're spending to come to a game. Team performance is very important to them. If the team's playing well, then you know they're going to put their Guardians gear on, and they're going to come down to Progressive Field and watch a game. And they tend to be ambivalent on a couple other fronts. So these standings surfers are literally, where is your team in the standings? And that's going to drive how they think about coming to games or not coming, which is where that ambivalence, team's not playing well. Well, you know what? I was never really that big of a fan anyways. Activity planners is another segment. This one skews a little older than other segments, and they're looking for outings or activities, often with adult friends or family. And socialization is a really important aspect of the activity. They want to socialize with family and friends. They tend to show up on promotional nights and theme nights. They enjoy those. They add to the flavor of coming to a game. They want to make sure that the environment is you know, safe and family friendly, healthy, etc. If it's not, then they may choose to spend their discretionary dollars in other places.
Brian, quick caveat there, because maybe it's changed, but I've been telling my students for years that the number one promotion is fireworks. Does that still hold?
Fireworks for us, absolutely. We start them like Memorial Day through Labor Day, and on the weekends, on Friday and Saturday night, we've taken the approach of make big games bigger. Our biggest games are Friday, Saturday night. So we do fireworks on Friday and Saturday night. That's when our dollar dogs and our $2 domestic can beer offerings are with Miller Lite, Miller Coors. So those fireworks are a trip driver for us, and team performance matters, but you know, activity planners are coming. to your point, Jim, for the fireworks. They're coming for the hot dogs. They want the giveaway item. You know, they enjoy the $2 domestic cans, and they're just looking to have fun coming to a game. So that segment plays into the description activity planners, you know, kind of plays into exactly what you would think it is. I'll hit two more segments, and you know, there's a couple of other ones, but social media stars are exactly what you would anticipate. They tend to be a little younger and more diverse segment. They want to see and be seen having a good time. It's either as part of a group, or they want to be seen by friends on social media as having a good time. And if they're having a good time, their friends and their connections via social media often want to know, where are you having a good time? Because I want to be in a similar place. You know, being trendy, impressing others, you know, being seen in and part of social spaces is really important to social media stars. You know, their barriers are not uncommon with what you would anticipate generally a younger, more diverse segment of the fan base having. You know, the perceived cost of attending, the length of the game, long lines, these tend to be limiters, or I'm not interested in those kind of things. And of course, you know, team performance plays into, hey, that's going to drive excitement and people want to be here. So they want to be a part of that. The last segment I'll highlight are what we call infrequent splurgers. These are huge baseball fans, and they appreciate that traditional baseball experience. They don't come that often because of the cost, but they spend more money than other segments when they do. So when they come, they're going to get a cap. They're going to, you know, they're going to go to Melt. They're going to go to Barrio and buy the local food and drink and spend a little bit more money on that. They're very motivated, you know, by the Guardians, by baseball, by team and player connections. They're going to love, you know, Jose Ramirez. They're going to love, you know, the long-term player, the star on the team. Some of their barriers are games are too long, which is why some of these rules changes play into our favor with this fan segment. And they perceive that tickets and other items cost maybe a little more than they should. But because they come so infrequently, they're willing to splurge on those things. So those are some of the core segments. We use the insight from those fan segments to drive product development for us, and then the way that we market and reach those fans. Some of those fans obviously are going to be attracted, or you'll be able to communicate with them. Social media stars, you got to be on social media to reach them. Your infrequent splurgers, you know, they may watch, hey, there's a big series coming up, and they see that on television, or they see a billboard, or they hear something on the radio and say, oh, you know, the Boston Red Sox are coming to town. I want to go watch that game. Or the New York Yankees are coming in town. I want to go see them. So hopefully that makes some sense. But we got that insight drive the way that we approach, you know, running our business.
As I listen to you describe them, as a grandfather of four now, I kind of know what group I'm going to fit into in the future.
Cleveland State University's new Sports and Entertainment Management program, where students can turn their passion for sports and entertainment into a rewarding career, gain hands-on experience, and learn from industry experts in the rapidly growing field. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
So, Michael is our social media guru, and I know he's got a question for you on social media.
I do. So you brought up some of the stuff in there. I feel like I fall into that longtime loyal. I'm actually going to be out at the ballpark tomorrow, taking the family to go watch the game tomorrow night. So I'm excited for that. But I do another podcast, and I know some of those social media stars, like a Sir Yacht who shows up in his Where's Waldo costume all the time, or a Gab Gowdy who is constantly talking about the Guardians. So we can see that there's a lot of social media going on outside, but what does the Guardians organization do, and how do you use social media to engage with the fans and promote the team, and what platforms have been the most effective?
It's a great question. And social media is critical to engaging with our fan base. The platforms may change over time. You know, what is the most relevant delivery mechanism for a different segment, but the need to be relevant on those platforms isn't going to change. So, you know, Facebook may skew a little bit older today. Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, those four certainly our players and for our younger fans become very important. And as we engage or develop content to play an active role on social media, our communications team and the folks that work within that segment of our business tend to operate under the broad direction of, you know, let's have fun with a little bit of an edge. And that little bit of an edge plays to what I would say, you know, pride, resiliency, loyalty, aspects or attributes that are from and of Cleveland. And that tends to span multiple generations and be a common thread across our fan base. So as we develop content, oftentimes it'll have some of that fun with a bit of an edge.
All right. Well, you can definitely see the bit of the edge. Whoever is running the Guardians Twitter is absolutely fantastic. Chef's kiss with a lot of the stuff that they put out. So they do a great job. And thank you for taking me through the social media stuff.
Hey, Brian, let's shift gears if we may. You've got a great lineup of corporate partners, sponsors, people that may be new in some cases, but of some that have been with you for many, many years. And Ted Baugh and Tim, they do a great job, you know, cultivating all that. But can you talk to us a little bit about how they benefit both the team and their organizations? Because if it's really going to be a partnership, both parties are winning, right?
Yep. It's a great question, Jim. And this plays to some of the learning historically. You know, as I came from a different industry, Tim Salser, who is our senior vice president of sales and service, came from consumer products. For many of our largest partners, and I'll start with Progressive as you know, a big Fortune 500 company who happens to be located in the eastern suburbs of Cleveland. Progressive has a tremendous business operation. And as they think about investing on the sponsorship front, both from a naming rights for the ballpark as well as sponsorship, so marketing assets, signs within the ballpark, they look for where they'll get the highest return from a TV visibility perspective, from a listening perspective. Radio, certainly with Tom Hamilton, is of value in Northeast Ohio, as you know, Hammy is a Hall of Fame broadcaster, and we're fortunate to have, you know, Hammy and Jim Rosenhaus as part of our radio team. So for partners like Progressive, Sherwin-Williams is another big, you know, publicly traded Fortune 500 right here in our backyard. They will look to invest on two fronts. One, as a great partner in the community of Northeast Ohio, you know, they want to be associated with the teams. You know, so whether it's us, the Cavs, the Browns, that's important for them within the community, for their employees. But make no mistake, they're going to be looking for returns on their investment, particularly on the media front. You know, the Cleveland Clinic has been a long provider of healthcare for our team, you know, our front office. They get value out of their association with the team. And we're grateful to have, you know, the partners that we do. And certainly, whether it's players on the field or employees off the field, you know, you've got the best healthcare in the world a couple of blocks away. You've got some local, you know, partners like Union Home Mortgage or Discount Drug Mart, where, you know, they've got businesses that are in Union Home Mortgage, you know, national in nature. Bill Cosgrove and his team being here from Northeast Ohio, it's important to Bill to be invested in the team. And, you know, he comes to a lot of games. He's interested in baseball and he wants to make sure he's getting a return on the investment that he's making here. You know, the folks down at Discount Drug Mart have been long-term partners. You know, for us, again, they're another one. You're going to see them with all the big teams here in Cleveland. And, you know, they're Northeast Ohio based and they're always going to carve out a niche in a highly competitive retail industry and find a way to be relevant over the long haul. Companies like Medical Mutual, Dollar Bank, you know, these are big, big partners of ours. you know, in healthcare, in the financial business, that, you know, MedMutual's instance located here in Northeast Ohio, and Dollar Bank, you know, they're in Pittsburgh, but they've got a presence in this part of the country. And then you got a couple of like big national partners. MillerCoors is our big national beer sponsor, and Pepsi on the carbonated beverage soft drink front. So Pepsi and Aquafina water, you know, in their instances, they will look at attendance. They want their product associated with the fan experience in ways that are positive. They want to be around the energy, the appropriate demographic, and they want their product consumed and activated in those kinds of environments. So they'll be looking beyond the return they may get for a sign. They'll look for activation around the brand and the experience that's created around it.
Let's talk about activation a little bit, because they can also help you as you're building your brand in the community. Because if I do something with the Guardians, as opposed to just a bank doing it by myself, it's a little bit harder to really get into those grassroots promotions that the Guardians are so famous for, with Little League Baseball and the other programs that you get involved with. So what a great way to team up and do some wonderful things in Northeast Ohio.
It is. And you know, our community impact and involvement is something that players will come and go over the years. But as we look to make a difference more broadly in the community, we think of that along the lines as, you know, acorns turn into oak trees over the long haul. So our investment in youth sports, youth baseball, underwriting, you know, CMSD, baseball and softball, recreational baseball in Cleveland, the Dolan family has for years, you know, quietly underwritten all the costs for uniforms, umpires, equipment. In those instances, as we look for ways to activate, we call them fields for the future, where we're renovating fields. We've turfed some fields the past couple of years. These are areas where a lot of our partners, as they look to give back in the community, afford opportunities where we're going to activate around that. Certainly during the season, we can build into the routine of a player to stop by a certain place where we're renovating a field or a ballpark. And the players will be a part of that. They enjoy getting out in the community with the younger kids and employees of other companies that want to give back in the community.
And then with your background at Procter & Gamble, a lot of your fans will hear analytics and they'll quickly race to the player development side, you know, and much is written about that. But for a lot of our fans and our students now, analytics on the business side is becoming more and more important. So talk to us a little bit about how you use data analytics to help you with your sales and marketing strategies, and what type of metrics you might use to take a look at the success there.
So we measure everything. And some of this is a carryover for some of our senior leaders from outside the industry, particularly with publicly traded companies. You know, quarterly earnings are four times a year. When you do that for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, you've all of a sudden played, you know, 60 or 80 games. And you need to be able to perform consistently over time. So we'll look at some key performance indicators, you know, total business performance, things like paid attendance, the dollar per cap. So the number of people that are paying to come through the turnstile times the, you know, dollar per cap will give you a gate receipts for a given game. Those would be pretty standard metrics by which you can compare your results as a team to similar size market teams, and then look across Major League Baseball. We'll also look on the operating expense side. How are we doing versus budgets that we set? And what do some of our expenses look like over time? And ensuring that we're driving revenue at a pace where we can actually create margin for us to reinvest in a baseball team. On or off the field. And ultimately, Chris Antonetti, Mike Chernoff will frame those investment choices for Paul Dolan, whether they're on players on the field or they're in player development programs or, you know, amateur scouting, things that help them find future talent Logan Allen didn't just show up yesterday and pitch an incredible game. That's a great example of our baseball operations folks being able to take some of the margin flexibility that's our responsibility to drive on the business side and reinvest where they think we'll get the best long-term return. And the last area is what I would call organizational engagement. So we will do quantitative engagement surveys. This is another one, a page out of many big publicly traded and privately held companies want to measure and understand objectively how employees feel about the organization, how they feel about what you're doing from a business standpoint, what you're doing in the community. You can ask them, but more often than not, at the end of the day, the best results are the ones that are quantitative, they're objective, they can be anonymous, and they tend to the truth tends to come through in those. And we'll use those to help shape how we think about talent acquisition and then talent development over time, so we can build a sustainable business team off the field.
Yeah, we recently had a number of your employees on campus for a one-day recruiting event, but not only do you have loyal fans, you've got some real loyal employees and have done a great job there. Let's talk about the future. But as CEO, what are some of the biggest challenges that you think you'll be facing in the coming years? And this is an opportunity to maybe talk to some of our listeners about some of the big changes coming to the ballpark as well.
So, I think some of the biggest challenges for Major League Baseball in the aggregate relative to the NFL and the NBA, the business models behind these big professional sports organizations, they're different. So in baseball, there is no salary cap. Your market size has a significant impact on your ability to generate local revenue and create local margin flexibility to reinvest into your team. So for a marketplace like Cleveland, the pragmatic reality of the market within which we compete is it's smaller. Our fans are fiercely loyal, and we're grateful for that. The flip side is, there's a little over 2 million people in the Cleveland, Akron, Canton MSA. It's 10 times that size in metropolitan New York. There are two teams there. Great. Divide that by two. There are five times as many people in those markets. It creates a dynamic where over the long haul, it's difficult for small market teams in Major League Baseball to sustain competitive performance when the gaps between the top five team payrolls and the bottom five team payrolls in baseball today are larger than the salary cap in the NBA. Again, it's not better or worse. They're just different business models. In the NFL, you may track your gap to salary cap, but in baseball, there is no cap. So you've got some big market teams that do have the wherewithal to spend at significantly greater rates. That doesn't guarantee success on the field, but over the long haul, it does enable them to retool or to invest in competitive windows, just frankly, differently than smaller market teams. So some of the things that we try and do are exactly what you asked in your question, Jim. It's, on the local level, finding ways to make sure that the experience at the ballpark is one which compels fans to come. And when they come to a ball game, hopefully have a positive experience and want to come back. And if it's a single game buyer that decides they're going to come to three or four more single games, they eventually become, prospects to be mini plan, six game holders, who then become prospects to be your, quarter season ticket holders. And over the long haul, your half season ticket holders, your full season ticket holders. So we're constantly looking for ways to create compelling fan experiences to get people to come to ball games and fulfill against those, exceed those expectations they may have. So they want to come back and come to more games and spend more money while they're here.
Well, big part of that are your future renovation plans that you recently unveiled. So you got to be pretty excited about what the future looks like for the ballpark.
We are. And our renovations will take place in the off season of 23 heading into 24, and in the off season of 24 into 25, and at a very high level, the renovations this off season after the last out, which hopefully is, you know, late in October, we will start demolition immediately. And as we head into the 2024 season, the bulk of our focus will be on the upper deck and where we currently have the terrace club. So I'll start with the terrace club and kind of work around the upper deck. And the glass will come off the front of the terrace club, and we'll have an open air set of boxes, seats, and standing room only areas behind which will be a beer garden. Again, Cleveland is a beer drinking market. Yes. And, you know, obviously we want responsible beer drinking, but we know that's really an important part of the fan experience, particularly in the summertime. You know, put on your flip flops, your cap, come down to a game, grab a beer and a hot dog, and, you know, watch fireworks. As you work your way around the upper deck, we will actually be looking to cut see-through spaces where you can actually see into the ballpark from the concourse. And as you get up from your seat and begin to walk, you know, out to the concourse area that's behind the seats in the upper deck, you'll have great views, you know, of the surrounding area. As you work your way around to right field, what our fans and many of our employees finally call the shipping containers, they will be removed.
Okay.
There are some seats down in front of the shipping containers today. The seats will stay. And where you see the shipping containers that have, you know, some of our Hall of Fame players' names and then years where we've won pennants, those will be taken off, and that upper deck will be flattened. It will have cover. Again, another outdoor bars, beer garden, and a great space for groups that would actually have coverage over their head if you've got some rain.
So in terms of a fan experience, I mean, I'm just feeling the open air, and I thought it was cool when Jacobs Field first opened, that glass enclosed, you know, like that was beautiful, but
yep.
All the glass is gone and it's all open air.
It is. And you're exactly right. Back when, you know, Jacobs Field was built back in, you know, 1994, that concept of a higher end dining experience where you had terraced seating and someone was coming and serving you, that was a popular thing to do, you know, 30 years ago. You can't get the smells of the hot dogs, the
right,
fresh
right.
grass, and you don't hear the sounds of, you know, a ball, you know, hitting a bat and the crack of the bat and the crowd. It tends to be a more sterile environment. So removing that glass and creating an open air space, you know, we hope in a lot of these spaces where that $49 standing room only ballpark pass will enable fans to go to a lot of different places in the upper deck, in addition to the corner bar and in the lower bowl, and experience, you know, a lot of fun, particularly in the summer months when it's warmer. And you can walk around and in and out of different spaces without necessarily being confined to a seat.
Give us a quick snapshot of the lower deck. And well, I'm sure we're going to invite you back as we get through one phase of the renovation, but what could fans look for the following year when you start to get after the lower deck?
So the following year, fans will see we're going to call it a dugout club, which will be down behind our seats, kind of underneath where the stadium seating is today, a club where approximately, you know, 275, 300 season ticket holders right down behind home plate will be able to have a different experience from a food and beverage standpoint. And enter into a club that's underneath the actual ballpark stadium seating. You know, the vast majority of Major League Baseball teams today have a product like that. Mm-hmm. So that, from a fan standpoint, will be something heading into the 2025 season that we will address. And while we're doing that, we will renovate our clubhouses. So our clubhouses were state of the art in 1994. As new ballparks have been built, as ballparks have been renovated, Our clubhouses have fallen behind. So we'll use this as an opportunity to improve the clubhouse experience. Again, very tactically, two things that may have been okay from a fairness standpoint in the 1990s, they're not okay anymore from a competitive balance standpoint. You need to have kitchens to prepare food for players in the visiting clubhouse. Willie Jenks, who's
there, we did a tour with your assistant for some high school kids. It's their home. You know, I mean,
it is.
Players spend so much time in the clubhouse.
You know? That's exactly right. You know, we have a 6 o'clock game. The Colorado Rockies are in town for the next couple of nights. The Rockies players started showing up shortly after noon for a 6 o'clock game. They come in and they're taking meals. They're gathering in the clubhouse. They'll be out, you know, at batting practice and doing things on the field probably right about now. But to your point, Jim, that's where they live. They sleep, they wake up, they get a meal, and they get over here to the ballpark, and that's their life. So we'll be renovating those clubhouses to bring them up to, you know, a Major League Baseball standard heading into the 25 season. And while we're there, that's where we'll address this dugout club. Those are the big ones that are in the lower bowl. There is a space over on the 9th Street side, right up against 9th Street, where we're actually going to take a food preparation that's done in the lower concourse today and move a major food preparation point to what would be the ground level up against 9th Street. So today there's no view of the ballpark. We call them the blowout gates. Sometimes we have gatherings there for larger groups before games. We will actually build a building back there, have a major food preparation point. The top roof of that building will actually enable fans to experience that group space I talked about before. And in between there, we'll be storing things. So a lot of the storage in the lower concourse building is old. And whether you're in an arena, a football stadium, or a ballpark, storage is precious and finite. So we need the lower concourse for a lot of our baseball operations and our clubhouses. So storage space there today will move to a building that we will put up that's up against 9th Street with no view of the ballpark. And we'll start working on that building this offseason.
All right, we got time for two final questions. I'll take the first one. We'll let Michael wrap with the final question of the day. But, you know, you and I have met. We have an embarrassment of riches right outside our front door here at Cleveland State. But what advice would you be giving to our students that, you know, want to work in sports, want to work in baseball?
You know, I would say whether you want to work in sports or not, work hard, treat people with respect, and do the right things the right way. And those three things tend to lead to success in whatever field you choose to pursue, as a young professional. On the sports management side, Jim, we're really lucky that you've chosen to come back to Cleveland and get things going at Cleveland State. Cleveland, as Major League Baseball markets go, there are 20 Major League Baseball markets that have NFL and NBA franchises. Cleveland is by far the smallest market that has NFL and NBA franchises. The next closest market is a little more than 40% larger from a population standpoint. That said, you know, you can walk from the pitcher's mound to center court to the 50-yard line in 15 minutes and not break a sweat on a hot summer day. That's a gift. And, you know, you can walk over to Cleveland State's campus. So the opportunity for a young professional to learn about all of the different aspects from a facility, from an operational standpoint, from a sales standpoint, a marketing standpoint, finance, IT, HR, professional sports teams are businesses. And all of those types of opportunities that exist at a baseball team or an NBA team or an NFL team, frankly, are no different than Progressive and Sherwin-Williams and Procter & Gamble and big companies. So for folks that have an interest in sports, you don't have to have played at the highest level. If you're competitive, you enjoy sports, it's a wonderful industry. Where at the end of a hard day, I've got to watch 81 home baseball games every year. That's not a bad thing. That's a lot of fun.
No, you're writing our brochure for students like Michael. Michael, you get to wrap things up with the final question of today's podcast.
All right. Well, Brian, I just want to say thank you for joining the show today. But I want to know, what are your hopes for the future of the Guardians, both on and off the field?
So, Michael, it's a great question. And I think on the field, again, we are so blessed to have Chris Antonetti, Mike Chernoff, Matt Foreman at senior levels running everything from a amateur scouting to player development perspective, and ultimately Chris working with Terry Francona at the major league level to try and win major league baseball games. We're in a really unique, fun window. We have the youngest team in major league baseball. We were the youngest team last year. We're the youngest team again this year. Our major league baseball team is a year younger than our AAA farm team, which is the youngest AAA farm team. So we have a lot of talent in our pipeline, and that's a testament to Chris, Mike, and Matt, and many others in our baseball operations. So while on the business side, we don't control team performance and weather, the team performance side, we like our chances with some of the best in the business who have chosen to come to Cleveland and stay in Cleveland and make a difference in on the wins and losses on the field. It's always easier, and you tend to be smarter and better off the field when your team is winning on the field. And as I see Jim kind of laughing, I'm sure he can relate to that. The weather component, look, it's Northeast Ohio. It's cold in April. You can get a 75 degree day like we had with the Yankees 10 days ago, or you can get snow. But the summer months are beautiful here. And, September, and when we're fortunate to play into the postseason into October, it's a great place to be. So when we think about off the field, the renovations that are coming over the course of the next two off seasons really modernize the ballpark, will help us create a transformational experience for fans and position us really well to compete off the field, which again enables us to reinvest in the product on the field, whether it's in players or in things that we need to scout and draft better and or develop players better. And the Dolan family, we're very fortunate to have the ownership that we do, because this is not a money-making proposition. This is about doing the best we can to lose as little as possible or come close to breaking even. So when we're successful, everything is poured back into the franchise. And that's enabled us over time to kind of thread a needle and maintain competitiveness on the field, while we fight as best we can as a small market team and do the best we can with our very fiercely loyal fan base to find ways to compete and not make excuses.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian. Well,
Brian, we are so lucky to have you as part of our future and our strategy as we get things going here with the sport and entertainment management. And I love the way that you brought in entertainment, because it's more than baseball. And then some of the changes you can make to the ballpark just adds to the whole overall entertainment experience. So thank you for all that you're doing with us over here at Cleveland State.
Thank you very much, Jim. And we're looking forward to continuing to partner with you and do things in the classroom and outside the classroom. And as you build a world-class capability at Cleveland State, we want to be a part of that, as I'm sure the Cavs and the Browns do. And that's the great thing about being from Cleveland and having these three storied franchises literally walking distance from Cleveland State. So excited about a bright future for everybody.
All right. Go Guardians.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Michael. Very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you too, Brian.
Okay. We'll see you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, this is Michael Carlisle, and for Professor K, we want to thank Brian Barron for joining us on the show today. We will be back next week with another episode of Inside the Business of Sports. And remember, Vikings row together.